Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely fine, sir. How are you on this interesting day? We have a rainy day today.
Wow, okay. I wish we had a rainy day out here. We need water bad, so transfer some of that out here.
Really? Are you still going through a drought out there in the San Francisco area?
Yeah, it seems like almost every year, since I've been knowing you, we've been having this kind of drought thing. Last year was good, but yeah, we are.
Is it a little worse this year?
Yes, because we've been having like Indian summers. It's been very strange weather out here. It's like it's like almost summertime. It's really weird. It's not good for our fireworks.
Yeah, we're dealing with the same thing here as well. You know, and our audience should know that. You know, you're on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast, and we are actually getting some very warm. You know, not that we're not thankful for it, but it's warmer temperatures than normal. And that can be, that can choose to be a problem. I mean, if, let's take a really quick look at this. Right now we have 47 degrees, but this is the scary part. The humidity is 89%.
Wow.
So that's pretty strong.
Yes.
That's pretty strong. So it tells you it's not only that, but it's going to, when you look at the real field, usually it's like about 5 or 6 degrees below. It's 9 degrees below here in the East Coast. Right now it's 5. But, Jay, we have some really good news. Why don't we get right into our show if that's okay with you?
Oh, that's okay. Let's do it.
Yeah. I was looking at the California tuition for low-income students, I think that is really, really an amazing thing, and something that, New York had adopted, for some students, but it can be misleading because it'll seem like it's that way, but then that would mean all the students in all of that area. And even if it's in a 15-20 mile radius, that's a lot of students.
Right.
So I would love to know what the criteria is to have students come in. What are your thoughts on that?
That's very, very interesting how they would manage an overload of students wanting that perk. So it's very, very interesting. And plus there's this additional cost, as you know, Gail, you got dining, books, how are you going to get there, So all that stuff could add up to even more, to almost $100,000 if you add all those other costs in. So, yeah, I'm wondering what the criteria in our new segment here, they don't really go into detail to tell us what, when, where, and how. So you get there. And then what point do they say, okay, we're going to have to turn away this these students because we don't we can't afford to.
Well, they do have criteria, Jay. They actually have criteria, and it's quite interesting. It really is, and when I say that, I've talked to a lot of students here who are coming out of high school and shared that when they came out of high school and they applied, they said, yeah, they tell you that it's free tuition, Ms. Davis, but what they don't tell you is that they don't really come through the way they say they do. They have a criteria that half the time you can't even meet it.
Wow.
So that's pretty interesting. That is pretty, pretty interesting.
So they really, the standards are high.
No, it's not even the standards. It's like, you know, first come, first serve, and then they have these structures that they put in place that, in a sense, weeds out exactly what they say that they're giving. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting to see. I would love to know how USC is going to handle it. That's what I would really like to know. You know, and then, you know, we've got this other thing about the new mini moon, which is really an asteroid. What is your thoughts on that one?
Wow. You know, and that's interesting how things type just float into our space. What, why, and why does this asteroid, why does these asteroids, you know, jump into orbit? What are they and what's the reason, you know? And will this asteroid get any closer to us? Because I remember maybe 10, 15 years ago was another asteroid, and they were telling us, be careful, this thing might hit our planet. So it's just, you know, anything can come close to the Earth, I guess, you know. We have this new asteroid, and hopefully we got to keep a look on it, keep an eye on it, because we don't know, is it going to get closer? Is it going to stay? How long is it going to stay in orbit? That last asteroid, I think, stayed in orbit almost 2 years. Back in 2007.
Yeah. Well, the only issue about this asteroid that I'm concerned, if you remember last year, an asteroid passed, and I'm wondering if this is the same one, because if you remember, an asteroid passed through, and the people at NASA and other places around the world now in our space continuum, so to speak. You know, don't laugh, but I wonder, this is what the space patrol is going to patrol. I don't know why we need a space patrol, but okay. You know,
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. Okay, go ahead.
That's what he's proposing. I mean, I'm really trying to figure out what they're going to be patrolling. Maybe he's trying to tell us that there really are other beings out there. I don't know, you know. But the other,
right.
I know the other news thing, Jay, that we want to discuss was the coronavirus. But we want to discuss that with Anu. So without further ado, I'm really excited, everyone. We're bringing on Anu Bardwaj, and she's going to talk to us about blockchain, women, so many things. We're pretty excited to have her. And so you ready to get started with that, Jay?
Yeah, let's get busy. I'm excited.
I'm really excited, too, you know. Okay, hold on just one moment, and let's bring her right on. Hello, Anu.
How are you? Great. How are you, Gail?
We are fine. We are fine. We are fine. It was so great to have you on and be a part of what we're doing today. And, you know, you're going to teach our audience some things. So we ask that you only, that when we ask you the questions, you only answer that question without adding extra, Anu, because we want to get all the good stuff from you. Is that okay with you?
All right. Whatever you like.
Yeah, because we want to get all that good stuff from you.
Okay.
And
I'm
down. We're down too. We can't wait to talk to you. So you know, it's this is Jay. Please meet Jay. Jay, this is Mr. Jay Logan. This is Miss Anu Bardwaj.
Hello.
Hello,
Anu. Nice to meet you.
Pleasure. Pleasure is mine.
Well. I have, we're going to go right into this, Anu, because we are really excited. So we thank you for being with us. And, you know, one of the things we want to ask you is you are into amazing things worldwide. I mean, it's so varied, we don't even know where to start, okay? So if you could give us a brief synopsis of what you do with you, women investing in women, India, media. I mean, you have so many, and what I love about what you do is it all, you know, some people are all over the place. You actually have it where it coordinates with one another. Can you share with everyone a little bit of what you do?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I have a company, a media platform called Women Investing in Women Digital, and it originally started off as a way to get women entrepreneurs funded, but at the same time teach women how to invest. And what is this space that sometimes is foreign to a lot of people? I don't know where to start. I don't know, you know, what to look at. And so I had spent a year in India as a Fulbright scholar at IIT Mumbai, Indian Institute of Technology in Mumbai. And during this time, my project was on high growth women entrepreneurs, and I did a benchmark on women in private equity worldwide. And so that's, from that starting point, I knew that, you know, we had a very small percentage of women at the highest levels that were investing big dollars, but they were significant dollars. Women today control more than 50% of the wealth internationally. That's a fact. We're inheriting money. We're making money. We are getting it through inheritance and whatnot. And this is going to be significant going forward. In the next decade, because there's a lot of causes that we all care about, and you're going to see a transfer of wealth happen, and women are in charge of that money. So this media platform was really designed to educate women about what to do with various types of investing, but also highlight incredible women entrepreneurs that are doing innovative things from all over the world. We started with small group seminars, which turned into large conferences that were backed by Intel, Wells Fargo, New York Life, Price Waterhouse. Last conference was at NASDAQ in Stockholm, 1,400 women on the Nordic Stock Exchange floor a couple of years ago. And then we started focusing on our social media, got over 1 million followers on that, and then saw that we had a significant number of millennials, 95% of our audience is millennials, and we launched podcasts by Gen Zs and millennials that covered all kinds of topics, but they were hosted by 16 to 23-year-old young women and girls. And so we have a radio network now called the State of Women Radio Network, and had my 2.5-year-old podcast with us when she was little with my babysitter and my nanny as co-host and producer. And so we made all this content, and now we've scaled and included other amazing women and their content around business, entrepreneurship, investing to keep the community connected. So that's really the platform that I've been building. And then I have some tech that's coming up, which we can talk about later in the show.
That's wonderful. So I have a question.
Please.
Yes. My question is, how is women investing in one another different in India, different than in the Western culture, in your opinion?
Okay, so women investing in women in India, we have not had any events there per se, but we did have a film that I made. It's under thestateofwomen.org. We created a film that was shot in Hyderabad and in Sharjah. And it was during the Global Entrepreneurship Summit that President Obama launched like more than 8 years ago. And they just held it in India about 3 years ago, I believe. And so at that time, we connected with various organizations on the ground, entrepreneurship focused. Our audience of 1 million, I would say, about 25% is across South Asia. That includes Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Bhutan. So I would say that the type of conversations that are happening in India are different in some regards. I mean, women are still not on the same page, I would say, as some of the other OECD countries or you know, the studies have shown that they're making progress, but they've got a ways to go. I would love to get more active in India. With that said, my heart is there, and I'd love to take this platform. We're in discussions with a couple families in India that have said that they want to partner with us, but it's a tricky, I would say, market to go into, discussing some of the very sensitive topics that we want to discuss. So I've kind of put that in on the back burner. It's still very much front and center, but it's coming. The dialogue is going to increase over the next few years. We focus more on the Nordics, more on Western societies, but I think some of the conversations that we want to dive deeper to are definitely on the horizon.
Anu, what I mean is, what I meant to say is, how do women invest their difference than Western world debt differently? How would, from your perspective?
I think India is a beast, because you have women at the very top echelons of society, and they have lots of money. They inherit money, and they are silver spoon from the time of birth. So these women, when it comes to investing, they often invest alongside their fathers and their brothers. It's very common practice also in the Middle East, and it's societal. So you have Hindu Indians and you have Muslim Indians. There's rules like how you inherit money in both cultures, and so you have rights to your money, and you can do whatever you want with it according to Sharia at the time of inheritance. So in that vein, I would say that, you know, sometimes it's a family decision, how decisions are made. They collective, it's part of a group. But I would say some of the leading investors in India, private equity funds, and I'll give you an example. In about 2000, at the beginning of the millennium, there were multiple funds started by women, private equity funds, like Renuka Ramnath. She was heading one called Multiples, and Chandra Kochar from ICICI. And you weren't seeing that so much in other nations in the Western Hemisphere. Like it just became more common for women to take the lead. Also in terms of family offices and such, like I do see a large number of women who are brought into the forefront, and that's happening now in the West as well, like where girls are actually being invited to the table more frequently. So that's the difference and the similarity at the same time.
Wow. Well, you know, one of the things, thank you for sharing that, because I think really, Jay, women need to understand the importance from the perspective of Anu, since she's been on both sides and looking through her lens. Tell us what blockchain is in its simplest forms, because, Jay, do you understand blockchain totally?
Not totally. So it'll be a different help.
Yes. So would you tell the audience what blockchain is, so they understand the difference between blockchain and cryptocurrency, and that cryptocurrency is not, it's a part of what, but it's not, you know what I'm trying to say, because wrapping my head around it is well new.
Sure. So blockchain is a new technology. So if I said to you, the internet is here now, back in 2000, what is the internet? The internet is this new way of communicating with other people, but you can also do commerce on it, right? So you could be using it for buying things, but you can also be using it for talking to people through mobile communications, like what we're doing now. We're dialing in on networks and so on and so forth. So the way that blockchain and cryptocurrency differ is, blockchain is the technology that cryptocurrency is built on. You need the blockchain in order for this digital currency to be tracked, and it's ultimately the money that the digital money that's created on this new technology, that is what's called cryptocurrency. Blockchain is the actual technology that allows cryptocurrency to be created. Does that make sense?
Jay, do you get that yourself?
Yeah, well, like, in other words, it's the foundation of something like Cash App, for example, some of the Cash Apps and those things. It's the foundation that actually allows those apps to function.
Yes, yeah, so Cash
Or banking apps, yeah.
Exactly. So, like, let's say, for instance, you have a Venmo. Venmo is not a blockchain technology. It's a fintech. It's called financial technology. So the Cash App is also a fintech, but it allows Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin is one of the earliest cryptocurrencies. I mean, let's call it, like, the first. Mr. Satoshi Nakamoto, who we don't know who this person is, came up with the Bitcoin. There's a finite number of Bitcoins that are out there. And other cryptocurrencies have been created since, like Bitcoin Cash and Ripple and DAI and Cardano and so many other currencies have been created and different blockchains have been created as a result. And so what I would say is that financial technology is before we talk about blockchain technology, fintech is a space where it's really, really sexy right now, like what we're seeing, especially in developing countries. Like, this has the potential to really help bank people that would have never had access before and help them save money from exorbitant fees that they can't really afford anyway. And so I think that, you know, it's just an amplifier at this moment in time. So either blockchain or fintech, but both are really heading in the same direction of banking the unbanked.
Wow, I get it. Okay. I have another question, Anu. I understand you helped your daughter create a crypto company. Could you tell us about it, please?
Absolutely. So I was working on a women's wallet in 2000. We're still working on this wallet, and we're making headway, and I've got techies in Brazil and in the United States and India working on it right now. It's a wallet for women to help them understand how to use crypto safely and effectively. And my daughter wanted to see my demo for this app. I showed it to her. We were in St. Kitts at the time, and she said, "Mom, you're spending so much time on this. What is crypto? I want to know." And we went online, and I said, she said, "Never mind, I'll look at a YouTube video." And she started watching some videos and said, "This is way too complicated. It's confusing. They've lost me in the first 5 seconds. They need to make content that's really easy out there for people to understand, especially like me, because I really want to know." And I said, "Why don't you come to the conference tomorrow? It's a Blockchain for Impact conference. Why don't you come along and maybe you'll learn something?" So she came and she listened to Roger Ver for about 45 minutes talking about how he got into blockchain and Bitcoin and whatnot. And by the end of it, I said, "Arya, what is he talking about?" And she said, "Mom, it's just digital money. You can buy things and they'll ship it to your door. Can I have a wallet, please?" And at this point, I looked at her and I said, "They don't make wallets for kids." And she goes, "Well, maybe you should start there. Maybe this is where, and then I looked at her and I was like, this is kind of absurd, but it's honestly true because, these kids are going to start using this without my permission, and before you know it, like, they'll be buying things, and then I'm going to have to know how to stop this, right? I'm going to have to know what is she doing and how do I protect her and whatnot. And so it's really smart, I think, that we start educating our children about digital assets, because for sure they're going to learn one way or the other. That's how they pick it up from their friends or whatnot. And that also led me to believe that once we educate kids, you're likely to educate moms and parents as well. So we actually went forward and we built an app for children with the help of NEM. Their technology failed in a very sad way. Like, we got it to work for about 6 months and then the app broke, and I contacted the president and the founder and said, "What do we do? The kids put all their donations into this app. Can you help us fix it?" And there's been no response and really no support since. But we could see a product after 6 months that actually worked and kids were learning. With that said, we're going to try again. We're working on it now to fix the app. The code that, we were provided was broken. But doesn't mean somebody else can't fix it. So we're working on that now.
Okay. I think Gail had a question.
Yes, I'm right here. I'm sorry. I had my phone on mute. Jay, you know, as we go into this with a new, there's another question I want to ask, because I'll share with you how it can help all industries through what she's doing. You know, while being an entrepreneur is important, we all need to find a way to ground ourselves. You and I have talked about this anew, okay? And, you know, the spiritual grounding, whatever. And there is, like, you and I both are part of or aware of blockchain and grounding oneself spiritually, and how that has become a way people connect to impact the planet and impact with themselves. Can you share your thoughts on this and a little bit about your experience with that and what you do as well to ground yourself?
So I think ultimately what I'm working on is mission-driven. It's 100% at the core of what the why is there. And I think it's important for every entrepreneur to have that front and center, to understand that this is going to be a journey, this is going to be a process, things are not going to work. That's part of being an entrepreneur, is failure, accepting failure. And how we handle failure is really what determines whether we're successful or not. And I think, you know, the key is to embrace failure, but at the same time, you have to learn and grow from it at each and every point. And I've taught my daughter the same thing, that, you know, it's going to work sometimes and it's not going to work sometimes, but can you pick yourself up and go, and do you really understand why you're doing this? Is this for helping other kids? We're going to bank other, you know, other people in other countries that may not have that opportunity. And so I think for me, I tried 4 times with the women's wallet. I'm going to be very candid about this. We've had different teams promise under deliver. We've had some people take our code and walk away. We've been scammed. And ultimately this happens in the blockchain space because, you know, you have people with money and you have people with tech. And when the two come together, if they're not aligned for the same intention, things can go wrong, right? So ultimately you have to believe in yourself and say, look, I know that I'm destined for greatness. And when this technology happens, it's through the forces of good that this is going to come to fruition, and the right people will show up, and the right people are raising their hands and saying, you know what, I'm going to help you get this done because I believe in it too. And ultimately, it's just that belief in what you're doing, because if you don't believe, you can't expect other people to believe, number one. And that's the example that I'm setting for Aria, my daughter, is that, you know, we have to keep going, because if we stop, there's a lot of people down the road that aren't going to benefit. And ultimately, I feel like we're serving them. And this is, you know, the greater good that we've been sent here on Earth to do, and we're going to do it. So I'm calling out to those people that want to help and support financial literacy for women and kids to join us. And I know that people are listening to this podcast. So, yes, reach out if you have any interest in this. And, yeah, let's join forces. So that's basically it, is if we put it out there to the universe that, you know, we are seeking to help other sentient beings, the universe will provide. And I firmly believe that.
But I want to go a little deeper. You and I have, you know, Jay and I and you, we have certain practices, from yoga to meditation and things like that we've talked about. Okay? And you and I both know that it is a blockchain community that exists, that exudes around those types of practices. Okay? Let's get a little deeper, because we all believe in the universe. But what are some of the things that you do or share with other women to within themselves? Because you see, before you can move forward on anything, you attract who you are on any frequency. And you and I know about certain communities in blockchain specifically. I'm not saying they're not in other communities, they're all over the place, that actually focused on bringing blockchain together with a focus on a spiritual base, whatever that may be for people. What are some of the things that you do? I mean, I know for myself, I like to get away, go to the mountains, meditate. I'm a Christian, so I do pray to God, but I also have some Buddhist teachings that do not interfere with that, but that I do utilize, or like, you know, that I do Art of Living anew, and Jay. So that is breathing and meditation. Like, what are some of the things you do to ground yourself? Because we can easily overwork, get caught up, or attract the wrong people when we're not centered. So can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So I've been fairly introspective from a young age, and I believe in purpose, but at the same time, I try to center myself as much as possible, and centering is I do that through audio journals. I've been keeping an audio journal for the past 5 years, tracking, you know, not just professionally, but personally, am I doing am I accomplishing what I need to personally, and am I staying balanced at the end of the day? It's really hard to have balance. I sometimes describe myself as a cheetah on a unicycle. I go really fast, and I'm just trying to, you know, just stay on this this track of mine that I've created. And it's, at the end of the day, it's, you are a product of your own mind. And if you believe you can do something, you will. And sometimes it's also about being holistic. So my health, I try to keep it together as much as possible. And, you know, I like nature. I have a beautiful place where I live. It's out in the preserve. And I made friends with the deer. They're my best friends. Beautiful nature. So, yeah, I've got that. And I try to spend as much time as I can with my little one. She's 9. She's not so little anymore. She's getting taller than me, almost. I know it's going to happen overnight. One day I'll wake up and she's taller than me. Until then, it's like I'm enjoying this little soul. And I think that brings me back to being, you know, my child self, which is great. And I do yoga. I've tried different types of yoga, from aerial yoga to hot yoga to different types of yin and yang and whatever other kinds there are out there. I'm very open-minded in that sense. Yeah, so that's basically it.
Well, I know Jay has a question for you.
Go ahead.
I sure do. Okay. Okay, you have worked with people from Scandinavia and Denmark, Sweden, Norway, to the U.S., and Saudi Arabia. What has been your experience in how each of these countries deal with finances and blockchain?
Oh, interesting. Okay, so the thing is, with Scandinavia, my experience in most of these countries has been from the private equity side. I used to work with Commerce Department and State Department, leading what's called private equity trade missions, taking U.S. fund managers overseas to raise capital. So when it comes to blockchain, there is a certain sophistication that these countries have, the Nordic countries, I should specify. I'm in discussions right now with a Danish company. We're going to talk later this afternoon about using their currency in our digital wallets that we want to deploy in Bhutan, the kids' wallets and the women's wallets. And so we're in discussions with them. And the reason why I'm selecting this company specifically is because they have the ethics, the correct ethics. And they're looking at blockchain as a solution for democratizing finance, which I think is, should be like the number one, you know, on top of the list on why we should even adopt this technology, because ultimately it's going to serve a lot of people that would not have access otherwise. So I think, you know, in terms of sophistication, the Nordics are there, and you will see adoption happening in countries like Singapore, like different parts of Asia that are far more sophisticated than other parts of the world. China is really up there as well. But when you talk about someone like a Saudi Arabia and a lot of the other Gulf countries, UAE, I've been going back and forth on, for instance, because some days, you know, they'll say, yes, we love, you know, blockchain. And the next moment you'll hear they ban crypto. They can't have exchanges there. And this happened back and forth. So it could happen like, you know, 1 month they're crypto friendly and 1 month they're not. The thing about Saudi Arabia is they are looking at chain. I heard about Aramco using blockchain for helping them manage like supply chain. This was just recently. The study came out. I don't know if IBM is working on this per se, but I do know that there is some collaboration, a big one happening with Aramco and blockchain. So I think, you know, you will start to see it in the oil and gas industry. You will start to see it in, you know, different sectors. I don't think crypto is particularly of interest right now, digital assets, but there have been recent reports that some of these funds, sovereign funds included, are investing into digital assets. It's just starting. It's like super, super new. I'll say they're dipping their toes in it, but I would say the Nordics are far more sophisticated.
Wow. Well, you know, I have Jay's going to take my question. We only have three more questions for you. And, you know, this is what really is interesting to me. And please don't laugh anew, okay? You and Jay will probably laugh. So, you know, I go to, you know, when you go to the ATM, right, you normally put your, you know, your bank card in, you get your money out, right? Well, now it's like offering Bitcoin. And my thing is, when I go to an ATM, I want cash. I want to see that I've taken cash out of my account. It's tangible. I can hold it. When I look at cryptocurrency and you want to give me a piece of paper of value, how do we know what the value of the crypto is coming out of a machine with a piece of paper?
So here's the thing. I personally have not used a Bitcoin ATM. I've seen them at crypto conferences, and I know they exist at certain institutions we won't need to talk about right now. But the thing is, like, I've only used the app, per se, like, to send money and receive money. And it's almost like, you know, sometimes it's easier for me to send a Venmo than it is to go to my Wells Fargo account. This is the truth. Like, I always get locked out of my Wells Fargo online banking for some reason. But my Venmo, it's very, very simple. It's user-friendly, and I can send money from here to there. And I don't need to see paper money ever, ever, ever. And this is for people. It's like a paperless society that we're moving into.
No, I have no problem with that. No, it's not our generation. This is all generations, because I talk to everyone at the UN every day or other people. My question to you is, I think what I'm trying to say is, I don't have a problem if I'm Venmoing. I don't have a problem if PayPal, whatever we're using. But it's like the cryptocurrency, what I'm trying, so that people understand. When you use Venmo, is it attached to your cryptocurrency account?
Venmo is not, but I believe Cash App is. So Cash App, which Mr. Lang mentioned earlier, Venmo is Cash App is now accepting Bitcoin. That's the app that I was talking to you about a few weeks ago. I didn't know the name, but
yeah.
Cash App is using both fiat and crypto. It's got both capabilities.
And I think one thing we have to be careful, because this is something you and I talked about before, and Jay and I talk about it, you know, because we deal with all generations. This is the future is not the youth at all. The future is everyone working together today. And there is no generation that segmentation of I'm against crypto or blockchain. I think it's a matter of people really understanding, which is why I'm asking the question, because not because I'm stupid, but I was always told no question is a dumb question. And given that you have a lot of background and, you know, you have a very extraordinary background of dealing with, to me, more than a lot of other people that I know in blockchain, because you've also created a wallet with your daughter. And to me, that says a lot. You have to know something to do that. You can't just get up and say, I'm going to go do this and know nothing. You've done your research, and you're still doing other things. And I think what we like about what you're sharing is that you're being very transparent about where you are, and this is where our society needs to go back to. So by you doing that, it allows other people to see that they too can make mistakes and also get right back up on the drawing board. You're also showing your daughter that it's okay to be human, which is this is the kind of stuff like I live for. Because without those things, no, but seriously, that's why I stopped you before you say generation, because it doesn't have, it's not a generational thing. But we want to lump each other inside of this instead of being a society that's different ages. We may hang with, you know, someone 14, but we may hang with someone 30, 40, 50, or 80. It doesn't really matter, because there's something to be learned from everyone. And I think we need to also state, like, we're learning so much from you. Like, age is important because there's something that comes with wisdom. But at the same time, we need to let our youth know you need to share with us too, because if you're 14 or 15 and someone's 28, you can still learn from each other. There's things that are coming out that, like, you're learning from your daughter that we didn't know. So, you know, I just think that that's an important point to be made. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Bi-generational is, for her, I'm not giving her cash anymore. Like, I remember getting cash from my mom if I wanted to go buy things at the store or whatever it is. And now it's, can I have your credit card, please? And also, if there's something, no, really, honest. And also, if there's a game that she's playing online, she's realized that she can use my phone and put her finger on it, and it's going to open the app, in-app purchases, because we have the same world on our thumb. And she was, like, opening my whatever. I was like, you can't open this. And she's like, yeah, but look, it works for me too. And I was like, oh, my God, this is, like, so dangerous. The authentication works for her. So the thing is, they don't know cash is what I'm trying to say. They're using common sense. They're like, I can open this. I'll just push a button, and I can buy whatever I want, and I'll ask her for a credit card. They're not going to ask for cash or go to the ATM. It's just, it's digital now. That's what I'm trying to say, is that they kind of missed
I'm laughing because
she was asking for cash. I wish she'd go to the ATM, because then I could protect myself, but I can't right now. What do I do?
You know, I have a funny story for you and Jay really quick for 30 seconds. There was a young man that he must have been about 6, and he's with his mom and his dad. And I guess his mom and dad were about 30 or something like that. And they gave him the credit card, and he's like, yeah, I know I use this for app purposes, but I'd like about 20 U.S. dollars. I want to feel it in my hand. And all of us just broke out laughing, because he's only 6, and both his parents are in technology, so they don't use cash. And his father's like, I don't have cash. He said, well, use your ATM card, go to the ATM dad, and just give me the $20, and we're good. And I'm like, wow, these kids, like, they know. You know, he was very clear, I'll use this. And then he said, Dad, I'll pay you back when I'm about 10, and I'll Venmo you.
Wow.
And I
mean,
I know. Yeah, I know. These kids are, like, wild, you know. Jay, I know you had a question for Anu about art.
Yes, I do. And I know that cash, my daughter's always asking me to use these cash apps, and she just thinks it's an endless well of money. Okay, so I don't know if I like the Cash App or not. I like the old days. Well, we'll talk about it later. Anyway, Anu, you have a degree in arts. How did you get involved in digital and finances? How did you do it?
Oh, this is an awesome question, and you have no idea why. So when I was at Georgetown undergrad, I was an art history biochemistry major. I had a double degree. And I was art history pre-med. And my parents, I come from a long line of doctors. They always assumed I was going to follow the tradition and become a doctor. And all through college, I kept thinking to myself, I would love to be an art dealer. I really want to be an art dealer. And I finished undergrad, and I won a full scholarship to go back to Georgetown grad school to study e-commerce. And at that time, the internet had just started, and my parents thought it was completely ridiculous. They were like, why would you want to study something like that? What are you going to do with that? And ultimately, the project that I was working on during grad school was looking at digital art galleries. Now, at the time, I was working for an art dealer to put myself through grad school. A dear friend of mine was specializing in Indian contemporary art and art from the British Colonial Raj period. There was a gallery in Washington, D.C., Dupont Circle, and he said, if you work in this gallery, I will be happy to give you this beautiful condo in exchange. Like, you can work out of the gallery, out of the house, basically. And so I did that and realized during that year that every time we sold the art, I would be depressed, and every time the art didn't sell, we would go hungry. And so he sat me down and he said, listen, I'm going to tell you truthfully, this is not the career for you. this, you should probably find something else, kid. Like, you're going to really struggle at this career. And so I started selling private equity funds because it's quantitative as opposed to qualitative, and anything with numbers and paper, and I understood why, I could sell it. So I ended up becoming a private equity specialist, and that led me to new technologies, which when I invested in my first blockchain fund, it quintupled, and then I said, yeah, this is for me. So I went completely opposite direction, investment side from the art side. So that's the end of the story.
Wow. We're going to do two more questions, this question, and then Jay and I have one for you in general together. Let's talk about women with one another. Sometimes the motivations of women are not what they seem. How do we get women to really support each other in finance? There's a difference between giving one another, you know, really looking to support each other, and looking to generate income only for oneself, that they think they can get through what, you know, they can, you know, get through by working with a woman for something she already has. In other words, what I'm asking is, how can we really support women? If we say we're giving, then let's be giving with each other. But if you're looking to generate an income only through something she's doing, to be straight about it, you know, because that's not giving. And I was listening to one of Oprah's Super Soul teachers on that, and it was really powerful. She said the difference in giving. If you're giving to work together and you're, you know, your values are aligned, that's one thing. If you're on the other side, when up underneath, what you really do want is to get something from what she's already doing, that's not giving. You work with women a lot, and I figured, you know, let's ask Anu her thoughts on it, because she works with women a lot. What are your thoughts?
I think in terms of there's a learning component to this. If you're both learning, I think that's like, I think there's equal value, you know. Equal value that's exchanged. If I'm learning from you and you're learning from me, we're moving forward, right? And at the end of the day, it's women need to be smarter about what they want and who they want to associate themselves with, and for what reason. And a lot of this happens. I tune into energy. I'm an energy person. I can tell like if where our energies are going to be a good match or not. And I would encourage other women to tune into that, because I do feel like there's a lot of women out there that are predatory, and it's about take and what can I do for me and how can I benefit myself. But if you're in a collaborative environment, right, and it's really nurturing, I think there's a win-win for everybody. And that's the kind of community that we've built over the years. If there are, you know, people that do not fit our community, they don't last very long. And women investing in women, we've grown to over 1 million. It's because we're constantly giving. We're not asking for anything. We're constantly giving. But with that said, there's been so many givers out there that have approached us and said, well, how do we give back to you? How do we collaborate with you? And you kind of find each other along the way. But, I mean, the stars pop up. They're so bright. They'll pop up in any case. And I just say keep doing good and keep doing it right as much as you can, and everything will work out. That's my belief.
Well, you know, I just want to say this real quick, Jay. You know, I think this applies. You know, what we're talking about applies to anyone of any gender or anyone at all. But one thing I do want to say is that a lot of times, you know, and I'd love Anu and Jay for you to come in on this. A lot of times what happens is, as an entrepreneur, you know, as you know, Jay is an artist. I'm an artist slash entrepreneur, and Jay is that too as well. And what happens often is, you know, you meet people who are going through a rough time trying to get their business off the ground, and desperation seeps in, and they don't decide to check that, to deal with that and deal with where they are. So they become desperate, and they don't want to show their under motivations. That's why it's important to know who you are, know where you are, and know where you're going, because sometimes they don't mean to come across that way. It's just where they are, and their maturity, I don't even say maturity, wherever they are, you know, a lot of times it's financially, or maybe their business is not getting off the ground and they have all the money in the world and they can't figure it out. You know, it's different places, and I think people have to be aware of where they are and present to when you are have anxiety around something, it makes you desperate, and to be aware of that so that you don't come from that place. There was a woman who came to me and said, listen, you do work here, I want this, and I'll help you with this. I'm like, cool, because she told me where she was coming from. I said, but if you're out the door in the next minute, we can't work together. We came together, she did her part, I did my part, and it was amazing. And we still support each other from this day to today. But she was up front, and that gave me the chance to say yes or no. Your
I like
thoughts, Jay?
I think if, I mean, basically, I feel that if the communication that you had with her, anytime you get a choice, somebody gives you a choice, I really think that that's a wonderful thing. That's all I can really say for my opinion. At least you got the opportunity to have that opinion.
Your thoughts, Anu?
I think different people have different expressions. it's a quantum. It's a quantum question. It's like nothing can be the same at the same moment in time. Like it's dependent on time. Time is like to give people a chance. Like you might not be in sync at one point in your life, but you're in sync at another point in life. And so, yeah, I agree to a certain extent. I try to focus on people I sync with right away and keep growing with those people. And I do understand that, you know, if you have difficulties and you get through those difficulties, sometimes there's a stronger bond. There was a teacher of mine, my spiritual mentor as well as one of my business mentors, and she told me that, you know, in relationships, and this is like, you know, amorous relationships as well as like, you know, business relationships or whatnot, that if you look at a Venn diagram and you see two circles interlocking, like some people come into your life and you're on your path and they're on their path and you've got these two interlocking circles. Sometimes, you know, the magic is going to happen only at those points where you two intersect, and you should be grateful for that because you're ultimately on your path and they're ultimately on their path. And if it doesn't work out, it has nothing to do with you or them. It's just that you're on different paths, and that's one way to look at the relationship. So I take that into business relationships as well and other parts of my life, that advice.
We say it very simply, reason, season, or lifetime. And Jay and I always say it's a reason, a season, or a lifetime.
Okay.
That relationships are meant to come together, sort of like you said. But I also think, too, that like in this young lady's case, she wasn't insecure or anything. She saw that I needed something, I saw that she needed something, and we got it done. But there are those predatory women who do that, and I have to agree with you, Anu. And on what Jay said as well. But I also think, too, that sometimes we tell ourselves that, oh, we intersected in that moment. It's the same thing like when you think about someone and you run into them. No, it wasn't by chance. You thought about them and you attracted them to you. That's bottom line. That's energy and frequency. Yeah. So when you run into someone, yes, I agree with you, it's intersectionality. But also sometimes you're attracting where you're dealing with something deep that's not present to you coming up to the surface. Like when I deal with people, because I'm empathic, I look at I don't even like it's the first time I've ever said that publicly. I don't usually say that. I'm gonna wipe that off the radio. But generally, I seriously, you don't want people doing that. But you know, people walk around and they're like you said. I agree with you, Anu. They're like predatory. You have to be careful who reaches across your aura, okay?
Yeah.
Who, because you're not attracting them, Jay and Anu, but they're there, and they're just looking. So it's not sometimes you're attracting or intersectionality. Is they came to get what they get. And I say people are different levels. Some people, as I've seen mentors that are okay mentoring you as long as you don't reach their status. I've seen mentors that when you get to their status, they kind of try to keep you down a bit. And I see mentors that are okay as long as they can tell you what to do. But if you ask them for something, you're asking for too much. And then I've seen mentors who are amazing. They train you so that you will go further than them. Those are the ones I like to be around because they don't have an insecurity about working together. They're clear who they are, and they're clear where they're grounded at. And if you do better than them, they wish you well, and they're glad for you. And it doesn't even have to be a mentor. It could just be someone you engage with or, like you said, in your own personal relationships. So I know there's one last question Jay had, unless Jay wanted to comment or you wanted to comment on that.
No, we'll keep going. I like what you said. I agree with it.
Anything, Jay, you want to say before you go into your last question, sir?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the attraction, the law of attraction, and what you're saying, where you bring this energy to you, and everybody does this. I mean, if you think about even the creation, is the creation an accident? No, it's all brought in by the energy. That's what I wanted to say with that. I agree with you. With you, you manifest, like what you've done, Anu, you've manifested all this stuff. You went to school. Your mom was saying, well, why are you studying this stuff? I can see down the line. You attracted all this stuff. So now you're here. And that's how energy works. So I just agree. That's what I'm saying. I agree with you. My last question, though, is very interesting, Gail, and me and you wanted to ask this question together, but I'm going to ask it. I want to know from you, Anu, when and where your thoughts about economics and the coronavirus affects on this.
I didn't quite understand the question.
Okay. I want to know your thoughts on economics and what the effects of the coronavirus will affect on the economics and throughout.
So I think I'll start here. I have a dear friend of mine who's in the blockchain space that's in Thailand right now. And he went there to work on a conference, on a project. He's a writer, he's a thinker, whatnot. He got to Thailand and he said 50% of their tourism is down because of coronavirus. And Thailand is like, it's a very special place. I have a lot of projects that went on there in the past. I have a lot of
Thais. Oh, God, yes. You know, we talked about that. Anu, we talked about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Thailand is my favorite place in the world. So I'm sorry,
right.
I couldn't help but interrupt.
So Thailand is hurting right now, big time. And they've got their challenges as it is, but tourism is a very big part of their economy. And so now you have fear, and that's gonna cause a lot of bad things to happen. It's fear driven, right? Ultimately. So just looking at that one example, but in other parts of Asia, like I think, you know, trade is slowing down as a result, and now we're hearing reports in San Francisco, like it's coming to the United States. There's a lot of hysteria and panic. But I would also say that, you know, the scientists on the other end, like this is where we need to start ramping up on our technology and you know, how do we prevent certain things, like the preventative mechanisms as well as vaccines and whatnot. And so I think there's that element of, like, we need to invest more in certain prophylactics and things like that. But I do see, you know, trade being affected, especially in Asia. And when China gets hurt, like, the rest of the world's going to feel it. Like, that's when you're going to feel pinched, because if things aren't working right in that part of the world, it's going to have a definite effect. It's a cause and effect in other parts of the world when things aren't working there correctly. I think we're all going to start to
fight. We're really feeling it. And he's in San Francisco. Jay is in San Francisco. So, Jay, I think you can speak to this.
I live in Miami. If you're coming out this way, let us know.
Okay. Well, our mayor, London Breed, just announced a state of emergency here just in case, because we're right here. We have one of the largest Asian Chinatowns Period. Just wonderful people. And you know what's very sad about it? This has had racial problems here because people think, oh, just because you're Asian, you must have this, and it's really terrible. It's horrible, and it's really messing up the social part of our neighborhoods out here because people are not going and interacting in Chinatown or going to Chinese restaurants because the fear that you talked about earlier, which is really, 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 really horrible. And, you know, I hate that this disease can cause fear and make everybody just not engage with each other. So, yes, it's pretty bad. Yeah. And it hasn't even got here totally, but just that, just mentally, in your mind and the spirit, it's really, really it's having an impact here. People are, you know, getting mad because people are wearing a mask. Well, they could be wearing a mask because any reason, you know, they're painting or anything, you know. So I hope that this doesn't get to a point to where we start locking people up because this is really.
Wow.
I hate to say this. It's on its way of happening. If we did it at the Mexican border, I have a feeling they're going to start to do this. And you see, it's interesting, and I'm not going to say my thoughts because, again, I don't want to get in trouble for my thoughts. But, I'm really concerned about everyone because this is bringing up racism of fear. Racism of fear. Not a racism because I don't like you, but a racism of fear. And when you have fear in racism, okay, a need to control something rather than solve the issue, okay? And many of us who claim to be, you know, especially from an American perspective, we claim in the Western society, whether European or whatever, we claim to be so ahead. My concern is I'm seeing certain things in certain parts of the country. Oh, I don't want to catch that. I don't want to catch that, but let's look at some of the diseases we even get from farming communities. That's here too. So I'm really concerned, and, you know, Thailand is my soul. It's not even just a favorite. Thailand is my soul. The people from Thailand here have taught me how to be a human being, and for me, that says a lot. I love the people of Thailand. We have a woman here who's a vegan cook, and I love her. It's her way of being is unlike anyone I've ever seen.
Wow.
So Thai people they never get angry. They are very humble, and they're a little different, you know, like I, yeah. And I remember that the Vietnamese and all of the people there, everyone has their difference that I love, but Thai is my soul. And that's all the way I sum it up. And thank you, Anu, for being with us. We thank you so much.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Jay. I really appreciate being with you both today.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, also.
Yeah, and we hope to have you back again with you on your next big project for part two. And thank you again.
Anytime.
And thank you, everyone, for being with the Creators 2030 Savoy Stop All Violence on Youth UN Arts Initiative. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.